Well, good evening and welcome to the third presentation in this, our 10th series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, I coordinate this series with my colleague in the back, Peggy Wright, with assistance from our webmaster there taking pictures, Hai Wong Wan, and Brian Carson, our instruction coordinator, selling books at the back. Special thanks to our technical specialist, Eric Fisher, who's joined us tonight. And a special thanks to the Butler County Public Library and Director Kenna Martin and Library Assistant Tammy for inviting us. And to the Daughters of the American Revolution, Butler County Branch, for putting on this wonderful reception. Tonight's presentation focuses on the history of Butler County and on the book about it in the Images of America series published this September by Arcadia Press. The book includes many never-before-seen photographs of Butler County's rich historical culture, its religious and educational institutions, and ordinary family life. And the co-authors are Roger Givens and Nancy Ritchie. Givens is a Butler County native who has held a variety of occupations, from barber to coal miner to power plant worker. He and his wife founded the Butler County Banner, which they then later merged into the Green River Republican, and which today is the county's leading newspaper. Roger is a past chair of the Morgan County Butler County Chamber of Commerce, the Green River Catfish Festival, and the Butler County Genealogical and Historical Society. He says his fascination with history came from his mother, Velma, who was an antique dealer and fond of telling stories of the good old days. And with this background, he later launched a weekly newspaper column about the history of people and places in Butler County. Ritchie is a native of Mount Hermon, Kentucky, and she developed her interest in local and family history from her father, with whom she spent many happy hours exploring the back roads of Kentucky. She received her MA with an emphasis in Southern history from WKU and a Master of Library and Information Science from the University of Kentucky. She's currently the Reference and Image Librarian at the Department of Library Special Collections at WKU and serves on the board of the Janice Holt Giles Society and gives frequent workshops on Kentucky genealogy. And following tonight's reception and presentation, we'll be hosting a book signing and want you to now please join with me in welcoming Roger Givens and Nancy Ritchie, and Nancy will be speaking first. Nancy?
Thank you all so much. Pleasure to be here. I'm always told I don't speak loudly enough, but a good librarian does not speak very loud. I hope that you'll be, as I was, like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, that we don't know what's in our own backyard. And so this has been an interesting journey for me to learn about wonderful Butler County, Barron County native, of course, lived in Warren County. But as I said, sometimes we don't know what's in our own backyard. So I want to read you a little bit of the introduction to the book to give you a little bit of background about Butler County, and then I'll turn it over to Roger as he'll discuss more about the photos as we go through them. But let me start with a little bit with the introduction. When the first settlers moved into the area that would become Butler County, Kentucky, they found a land of plenty. Settlers noted flocks of turkey so numerous that they blackened the sky, deer in herds of 50 or more, canebrakes so thick that pioneers had to chop through them, and a virgin forest with trees as tall as 100 feet. In 1810, Butler County was officially formed from parts of Logan and Ohio counties, and residents established a local government and built roads to other county seats. They also quickly constructed a courthouse, a jail, and established ferries across the Green and Mud Rivers. As in other areas, many of these efforts were completed using slave labor. The county grew slowly at first. In 1836, the state of Kentucky began construction of a slack water navigation system on the Green and Barron Rivers, with one lock and dam in Butler County and another in Muhlenberg and Ohio counties. The Butler County lock and dam was within a few hundred feet of the Butler County settlement of Rochester. The system, which provided year-round navigation from Evansville, Indiana to Bowling Green, spurred growth in the county and the development of the towns of Rochester and Woodbury, and offered the needed incentive for growth for Morgantown. The economic boom produced a thriving and culturally enriched community centered on the Riverport towns of Morgantown, Rochester, and Woodbury. In the early 1900s, the county supported 4 banks, 6 hotels, 5 drug stores, 3 milling companies, 2 axe handle factories, 1 outdoor and 2 indoor theaters, 4 high schools, and more than 81-room elementary schools, including 6 African-American schools. For a county with such a small population, Butler County has produced a number of notable people, including Oklahoma Senator John W. Harrell, 3 members of U.S. House of Representatives, Everett B. Howard, Oklahoma, Maurice Hudson Thacker and Don W. Moore of Kentucky, 2 Chief Justices of the Kentucky Court of Appeals, and Bayless L.D. Guffey and Thomas H. Hines, Navy Admiral Claude Block, Methodist Bishop John Monroe Moore, and a Congressional Medal of Honor recipient, Don J. Jenkins. So as I said, learning about these type of things makes me realize that we all don't know what we have in our own backyard. And so now I want to turn the program over to Roger, but I'll say a little bit about how we met and how we formed this partnership. Of course, he would come to the library looking for information about Butler County. He's working on another book about African Americans in Butler County. And naturally, of course, a good librarian, I helped him. And so that is how the partnership formed. And so it's my privilege not only to introduce to him as my co-author, but as my friend.
Thank you, Nancy. I want to start with this picture of an 1893 map of Butler County, Kentucky Department of Agriculture. The map points out places that aren't heard of today, like the community of Factory. That was a named factory because there was an axe handle factory there. At the time of this map, the population of Butler County was about 1,000 to 1,200 more than it is today. It had a population of 13,958. Morgantown was a big thriving town of 250 citizens, and Rochester and Woodbury were just a little behind that at around 190 to 200. Many people don't realize, but Mining City was the second largest town in Butler County at the time. It had a population of about 195, strictly on the coal mining town. This report that went along with this map says that the lands were mostly hilly and the timber was mostly cut. But there remains some splendid bottomlands along the Green River, and the land was selling for $7 to $8 per acre. This is a rare photograph of the J.C. Kerr. It's docked at Woodbury, at a place that people don't normally think of being a boat landing. But if you're familiar with the area today, that is where the boat ramp is at the mouth of Barren River. You can see this boat is headed up the Barren River here toward Bowling Green. This jagged land right there is Warrington, and then the river going on up this way goes on up to Mammoth Cave. The J.C. Kerr was built in Chambersburg, Ohio in 1884, and it was used on the Ohio until 1892, and it was bought by Captain R.T. Williams of the Evansville Bowling Green Packet Company. It operated on the Green River until 1904, and it was rebuilt and renamed Chaperon, and it was put in what was called a short trade, running passengers from Bowling Green to Mammoth Cave. And it would stop at Woodbury to connect with the through boats that were coming out of Evansville, pick up passengers and going up to Mammoth Cave. In 1906, the state of Kentucky built the lock and dam at Brownsville, and that made navigation all the way to the cave possible. Butler County native George Dabbs, you can see his picture back in the back of the easel. He had a photography studio in Morgantown at the time, and he ran the maiden voyage up on the Chaperon. After he retired, painted it into an oil painting, or actually a watercolor. It was one of his most famous works. This is a photograph of the Evansville. It was built in 1880 at Cincinnati, Ohio. Anyway, it was one of the 2 main packet boats that ran from Evansville, Indiana to Bowling Green. It made twice weekly trips. The Bowling Green was the Evansville was built in 1880, and it was the last packet boat that ran the river. It burned at the docks in Bowling Green on July 25th, 1931. There were 3 Bowling Greens during this time. The Evansville survived through all of it. It had a couple of nearer accidents, as you can see here, but one was coming out of the locks at Woodbury one time, and it struck a rock and knocked a hole in the bottom, and there happened to be a sawmill boat close by, and they got their pumps and kept it afloat till they could cut lumber, repair the leak. And another time it had an explosion. It was docked at Calhoun, had an explosion of a boiler that injured 11 people and killed two. Here you can see it sunk. It was sunk here at Wardentown. That's about approximately where the Aberdeen Bridge is now. But it was later raised and put back into service for this with the assistance of the steamer, the Speed. This is the interior of Evansville. You can see that there's quite a luxurious boat. See many of the black waiters that worked on the boat. There were a couple of cooks from Butler County that worked on the boat. Sam Radcliffe was one, and Albert Helm from Woodbury was the other. The boat would leave Evansville at about 4:30 on, say, Monday afternoon, and it would arrive at Rochester at about 6 that night, arrive on at Bowling Green about midnight on Tuesday the next day. So the passenger would get three meals at least aboard the boat. The fare was $5.50 from Evansville to Bowling Green, including a room and your meals. Sam Radcliffe, who was a cook on that boat, had one of the few black restaurants in Butler County. He ran a restaurant called the Dew Drop Inn on Logansport Road, and many of the white people of Butler County, or Morgantown particularly, used to go down and watch them dance. And they listened mostly to jazz music. But anyway, Sam Radcliffe, who was a cook on this boat, was the owner of that establishment. There were several showboats that traveled the Green River, the Majestic, the Cotton Blossom, the Princess, the New Era, the Water Queen, the American, Price's Floating Opera, and French's New Sensation. The Majestic, shown here, was the last showboat to operate on the Green and made its last trip here in about 1940. The ones who have bought the book, you notice it says in the book 1930. Well, I got my information, Agnes Harrelson's steamboat on the Green. But I had a friend of mine who called me from Lexington, North Carolina. He said, Roger, I was born in 37. I've been on this boat. So Tut Miller, some of you may know him. He and his wife both. Anyway, another picture I have of it shows a 1937 Chevy car by. So anyway, the boat is now docked at Cincinnati, right about where the Cincinnati Reds ball field is. For a long time, it was leased by the Indiana University, and they used it to put on some theater. I understand that now the city of Cincinnati has bought it and completely restored it, and it will be hired theater by the city of Cincinnati. This is a photograph of Woodbury. I don't know the year, but it has to be around the 1920s. This is Lock and Dam number 4 on Green River. This house right here is actually the first lock house, lock keeper's house. That was built in about 1832. This lock and dam was completed about 1840. It was built between 1839 and 1840. The first boat through it, I think, was in the early winter of 1841. But the Corps of Engineers operated out of Woodbury from 1888, when the Corps of Engineers took over this lock and dam, or all the locks and dams on Green and Barren Rivers. This was a Corps of Engineers quarter boat, they called it, where employees stayed. They operated 5 snag boats out of Woodbury. This is Woodbury Deposit Bank. This is Brown's Cash Store. But this is the government warehouse here. Part of that remains today. They tore down the 2-story part when they moved out. But they left this part, and it still remains today. It was used as Woodbury City Hall. This is a photograph of George Dabb. It's one of my favorites. George was born in Rochester in the 1870s, I think. He studied photography through a correspondence course and opened a studio in Morgantown in 1904. He was a very gifted artist and photographer. Without his work, we wouldn't have a record of the era that we have today. He had a love for Green River and enjoyed. They rented boats and got out on the Green River and made photographs during his younger years. His wife came from Calhoun, Kentucky. She was Morgantown's first female secretary. Before her, in 1904, all secretaries and cashiers and everything had been men. But he taught art and music in the school system before they had enough money to pay. He was his belief that all students should have access to art and music in their education. He went out of business, out of photography business in 1928, and went to work for the post office until early 1960s. And after that, he began painting pictures of the old, he'd look at his old riverboat photography and paint it with watercolor. Very advanced for his age, I mean for his time. As Nancy read in the introduction, Butler County had six African-American schools at around the 20th century. This is the Rochester School. It was district number 6. Some of you people here from Rochester may have known this man right here. This was Slaughter Ray when he was a child. And some of you people from Morgantown may know this is Edgar Robinson, who worked around Morgantown up until about the 70s. Oral Porter was the first African-American person from Butler County who was born in Butler County to get a college education. She went to Tuskegee Institute for Nursing. She became Bowling Green's first registered nurse and worked at St. Joseph's Hospital. In 2005, there was a state historical highway marker presented in her honor at her home at 714 College Street in Bowling Green. Now that's been removed today, and I hope they're going to put it back up, but it's along in the area where the new theater's parking lot, along there, somewhere along there. But anyway, the timber industry was probably gave Butler County its biggest initial economic birth. Before the Civil War, most of your settlers settled up the creeks in a little higher ground because the river bottoms flooded a little more often, so it left a lot of virgin timber in the creek river bottoms. After the Civil War, the nation needed a lot of timber for the repair of the railroads and also building new railroads, because during the Civil War, there was a large manufacturing boom after the war in particular. They needed a means to get the goods to market, so they built railroads. And the people of Butler County actually put themselves out of business by supplying the timber for the railroads. That was the demise of the riverboat era. This photograph is an early 1900s or late 1800s George Dapps photograph. It shows the size of the timber that was there. That's supposedly over 6 foot diameter tree trunk there. That's the first log off the stump there. Anyway, the timber business continued pretty strongly in Butler County up until all the 1880s and 1890s. As we read earlier about that Kentucky Department of Agriculture map, states that the timber was mostly cut by 1893. It's not a slave cabin, it's kind of called that around, but it wasn't built until about 1905. But it was built by a former slave family. Henry Beeson bought this property, the 100-acre farm, in 1877. He bought it on 6 installments from a man by the name of S.E. Belcher. It's in the Boston community of the county, still standing in good shape today. Henry Beeson bought it on 6 installments with the term that should he die, that his son would take over the remainder of the mortgage. And he did die after about 4 years, and his son Frank took the mortgage over, and with his brother Morris, they hung on to the property and kept on, paid it off. Frank Beeson married Elizabeth Claypool from Warren County, and she and Frank had about 9 children. 2 of them died in school age, and 3 of them remained in Butler County. 1 of them remained on that farm, Percy Beeson. Until he owned it until 1973. But anyway, Morris Beeson, Frank's brother, died in about 1913, and his father Henry died in 1919. But anyway, Frank and Elizabeth raised their children on the farm. All but 3 of them moved to New York. 1 of them just died last year, the last one. Percy lived on it. He married Lucy Bryant from Logan County. And they had 1 child who was never able to walk. But Percy hung on the farm until about 5 years after his wife's death and sold it in 1973. And in 1985, it was placed on the National Register of Historic Places. This is one of the 2 known railroad crews that was ever in Butler County. There was a vote for a railroad after the Civil War in 1872. The railroad was supposed to run from Bowling Green to the railroads at Madisonville. And they voted a tax on the residents of the south side of Green River in Butler County, and it passed, but the railroad was never built, and I've never been able to determine why it wasn't built. But anyway, another railroad was proposed in 1904, and this is the surveying crew pictured here. This railroad was supposed to run from Bowling Green to Horse Branch in Ohio County and connect the Illinois Central line in Horse Branch. It was supposed to run from somewhere in Forest Park to Bowling Green. They took a vote on the proposed track, and there was a lot of opposition to it at the time because of the steamboat era. And the opposition used the argument that the steamboats is all we'll ever need, and we'll have them for the rest of our lives. So we don't need railroads. We don't need that tax. So little did they know that they were putting themselves out of business. This is the face of one of the Aberdeen Mining Company's openings. Aberdeen Mining was one of the largest mining companies in Butler County in the early 1900s. I don't know the identity of all of the people in this photograph, but the lady sitting in the buggy there with her son, that is Mrs. J.D. Render and her son Clarion. J.D. Render was one of the stockholders in Aberdeen Mining. This is a great photo because it's a little hard to see. That shows the way they got the mine in, the coal in and out of the mine. That's a pony there that pulls these buggies. They had one pony per buggy. That I can remember seeing those when I was a child. Some of them, that one looks a little bigger compared to what I remember. They were just real short ponies. Because the mines in Butler County are not, the tops are not very tall, about 30 inches or something like that. But anyway, at that time, Butler County's coal was a highly sought after coal because it is a high quality coal. That Aberdeen coal is supposedly one of the richest veins in the county. It was called candle coal, highly sought after by blacksmiths and people in those trades. But the steamboats and the trains at the time were really desirous of that high quality coal because they had to carry less of it to get the right BTUs. This is a picture of Aberdeen Mining Company's main tipple, or only tipple, I guess. That's located about where the Aberdeen Bridge is today. That bluff right there is actually the Aberdeen Bridge sits on the north side of the river. In here, you can't see it very well in this picture, is the Aberdeen Hotel. This photograph's taken from the middle of the river. It's a George Dennis photograph. It's taken from a steamboat. Aberdeen Mining had an office in Morgantown. It had several, I'm told, miners' homes. I don't know that for sure, but it was common in those days for the miners to own the miners' housing and the company store and the whole bit. I do know the Aberdeen Hotel was right in there. And this is Butler County Fairgrounds. It was located on 231 South out of town, about where what we know today is Minden Service Station. It was developed and started actually in 1903, and they sold 100 shares at $25 a share. And it was just a group of people that thought the people of Butler County deserved a culturally and socially enriching environment, same as people in the county surrounding. Primary activity was harness racing. Butler County at that time was pretty well known for its quality horses. They also had competition in quilting and canning and vegetables, and just kind of like your county fairs are today. This is the dedication of the Little Muddy Bridge out on the Bowling Green Road. This was in November of 1929. That was project number 11. And just shortly after the bridge was built and dedicated, the state took over the route from, this actually ran, was the route from Owensboro to Bowling Green. And the state took it over and renamed that Highway 71. That looks like a pretty large crowd for Butler County at the time. I've tried to count them, and it looks like I counted probably about 75 people on that bridge. And it'd be hard to get a 75-person dedication to attend the dedication today of a bridge. Many of you may know some of the people in this photograph. This was my high school principal, Forrest West, Jim Drake, father of our county extension agent now. Bobby Green is here, who's a high school history teacher who's retired. Anyway, baseball was one of the county's probably most entertaining events during the whole early 1950s. Every community had a baseball team, and they played each other. There was a black team in the county. Communities would just get together on a Sunday afternoon and play against each other, and they had tournaments. The newspapers in Butler County. This photograph is Samuel R. Barnett. He was editor of actually the second newspaper in Butler County. The first one was the Morgantown Gazette. that started about 1881 or 2. Only printed just a few editions, and Samuel Barnett took it over and started the Buckhannon News, which it started in 1882. It was a very popular newspaper. It was a four-page weekly owned by the Morgantown Publishing Company. It came out on Thursdays. By 1886, it had a circulation of 528. Samuel Barnett, although he was doing good in the newspaper business, he closed it and sold it to some people in Rochester, and they started Buckhannon's next two newspapers. They were the Stewart brothers. They started the Rochester Sun and the Rochester Gazette, and I don't think either one lasted very long, even though Rochester was just about as big a town at the time as Morgantown. It didn't survive very long. And in 1885, H.B. Moorhead started the Green River Republican. The Green River Republican was started by a group of Republican shareholders who didn't feel like they were getting a fair shake from the Butler County News, because the Butler County News was Democratic in its policies. Therefore, they got competition from the Green River Republican. The Republican survived until 1992. Well, it actually still survives. But it survived as a separate newspaper until 1992. My wife and I bought it and merged it with the Butler County Banner, and we shrunk the title of it, but we did keep it, and we sold it in 98, and it has since come back as the Banner Republican. But this is Moe Helm. He turned this press, it was a Prouty press, a four-page sheet press. Moe Helm and Eldon Bailey were the two black men who operated the press or turned the press. This is Governor William S. Taylor. He was born in the Logansport area of Butler County. He served as circuit court clerk in Butler County. In 1893, he was elected Attorney General for the state of Kentucky. I said 1896. He was elected Governor of Kentucky in 1900. Politics in that day was kind of messy in Kentucky. At William S. Goldman from Cincinnati or Covington area, that kind of controlled Democratic politics in the state at the time. He was even not liked by a lot of what they call Bourbon Democrats. Who were the Bourbon Democrats were, most of them were former members of the Orphan Brigade, who they had vowed they would take over Kentucky after the war was over, and they did through politics, but not through war. But anyway, after Governor Taylor was elected, Goble, who was the chairman, had appointed a committee to investigate elections. They voted that the election was all a fraud and crooked, and that W.S. Taylor shouldn't be the governor. So they took it to the House, and they voted him out and voted Goble in. Anyway, after about 3 days after the vote, Goble was shot walking across the State House lawn in Frankfort. They swore him in as governor. I took a tour of Frankfort this past weekend, and the tour guide said there are many descendants of the hotel people that are still living that claim that Goble was dead when they swore him in. But anyway, we don't know if that's true or not, but he did serve as governor for 3 days before they pronounced him officially dead, I think. But anyway, it became quite heated politics in Frankfort after that, and they were indicting people left and right, whether they were guilty or not, or just take the blame off of the Democratic Party and put it on the Republicans. So William S. Taylor moved to Indianapolis, Indiana, and started an insurance company, because he knew if he stayed in Kentucky, he would be indicted. Just completed reading an account of that election. I really don't think he was guilty of anything, but myself. Of course, I'm a little prejudiced being about accounting, but anyway. He moved to Indianapolis and became a successful insurance company. From the state of Kentucky, there have been 9 people to achieve the rank of admiral, and 2 of those were Warren Woodbury. This is Admiral Claude Bloch, son of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Bloch was born in Woodbury, lived there until he was probably about 7 or 8 years old. His parents decided to move to Bowling where he could get a better education. But anyway, his father and mother were Bohemian immigrants, and they started a drugstore in Woodbury, and they lived above the old Woodbury Bank in Woodbury, in an apartment, and were pretty active in the community. But anyway, they moved to Bowling Green, and Bloch went on and was accepted to the Naval Academy. He served in the Spanish-American War just out of it, and served in World War I and World War II. He was commandant at Pearl Harbor when it was bombed. He was commandant of the base, not the naval fleet. He was commandant of the base at Pearl Harbor when it was bombed. He was getting pretty up in age at the time, so the bombing was in December of 41. By early 1942, they had given him a job in Washington as an inspector of Navy construction, ship construction. But I like this photograph because Franklin Roosevelt was very fond of the Navy. He was assistant secretary of the Navy before he had his crippling polio disease. He loved being out on ships, but you can tell with this photograph that both of them are really enjoying themselves being out on this boat. Claude Block, the people in Bowling Green, there is a chapel built on Fairview Avenue called the Block Chapel. It's in the Fairview Cemetery, isn't it? But anyway, it was built in honor of Adolph Block, who was Admiral Claude Block's father. This is Maurice Hudson Thatcher. He's another of Butler County's notable people. His mother was a native Butler County. She was a sister, I think, to Dr. Graves in Logansport community. She married a man by the name of Thatcher and moved to Chicago. And this is where Maurice and his older brother Anthony were born. I don't know what happened to Mr. Thatcher, but in about 1873, she married Leyland, from Logansport. He was son of the postmaster of Logansport. Well, they moved back to Butler County at that time when Maurice was 3 years old. He was educated in the schools here in Butler County, became circuit court clerk in 1893 to 1896, and when William S. Taylor was Attorney General for the state of Kentucky, Maurice Hudson Thatcher was his assistant and assistant Attorney General. He never came back to Butler County. Taylor left Kentucky, but Thatcher became U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Kentucky. And in 1903, he became the first governor of Panama under President Theodore Roosevelt, I believe. He served for a couple of terms down there. There's a bridge built today that was named the Maurice Hudson Thatcher Bridge, or actually Thatcher Ferry Bridge, across the Panama Canal. When they built it, they didn't provide, they only had ferries across it. There was a bridge built named in his honor of Panama, and they eventually renamed it Bridge of the Americas. But Thatcher came back and was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. He served for 10 years as a representative representing the Louisville District. He retired from that and was, actually he didn't retire, he ran for Senate and got beat, and he never ran again. But he became a member of Pan-American Tropical something in Washington, D.C. I can't remember what it is exactly. This is another one of Butler County's famous people. She was born in Woodbury. She's Bertha Honore Palmer. She was born in Woodbury on her father's 4,000-acre plantation, which actually was across the river from Woodbury. Very early in life, she moved to Louisville with her parents, and she met Potter Palmer, who was a little bit senior to her age. He was 46 years old, and she was about 20, something like that. But she married him, and for a wedding present, he built her the Palmer House Hotel in Chicago that still operates today. It's the Palmer Hilton. She was, a hellcat of a lady. She had a lot to do with the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago, and they say that her and her driver, when they would come through the construction sites, they didn't slow down for anybody. People just had to jump out of their way, and she would get off her carriage and start fussing and cussing. But anyway, she was a pretty powerful lady around Chicago. Potter Palmer also built her the Palmer Mansion in Chicago. It was about as big as the hotel, but it's been torn down. But she died about 1919 at their home in Florida. Now, there is some controversy. I've been told that her biography says she was born in Louisville. I went with born in Louisville, in Woodbury, in my book, because Bishop John M. Moore, who was just maybe 10 years older than her, in his biography, he states that she was born and raised in Woodbury. And there's an 1898 History of Butler County by W.P. Green. He also said that she was born in Woodbury. So I choose to go with Bishop Moore rather than her. Andrew G. Hamilton was born in Pennsylvania, went to California during the gold rush, stayed a while, and came back to Woodbury, Kentucky, because he had relatives there. He was in the business of boring for oil with Warren Hines, who was Thomas H. Hines' father. He and Thomas H. Hines, Thomas Henry Hines, were very good friends before the war. When the Civil War broke out, each one of them joined a different side. Major Hamilton joined the Union Army, and Thomas Hines joined the Confederate Army. But two of them led the two famous prison escapes of the Civil War. Andrew Hamilton led the escape of 109 prisoners from Libby Prison in Richmond, Virginia, by tunneling their way out. They, out of the 109, there were only 54 that actually escaped through. When they got out of Richmond, they had to cross the river, the Rappahannock River there, which was heavily guarded. They had to go through swamps and for roughly 50 miles before they could get to safety, Union lines. Anyway, after that, they were invited. He and a few more, I don't know how many more, but a few more of the prisoners who escaped were invited to Washington to visit with President Abraham Lincoln and Secretary of War Stanton. For this prison escape, he was a captain at the time, but he was promoted to major. He really never did serve as a major because he developed, I think, as I understand it, a little bit of a drinking problem. So they just always told him they didn't have any openings. But anyway, he became a pretty prominent, pretty important citizen in the 1893 World's Fair. Libby Prison Association had reconstructed Libby Prison in Chicago, and they invited him and the original 15 tunnel diggers to Chicago to give talks about their experiences. They had a play written about them. Anyway, they were the guest of honor for the Chicago World's Fair. Hamilton went on and became postmaster of Reedyville after the war, and served there until 1895, and he was coming to Morgantown to court, which in those days they'd come and stay 2 or 3 days. But anyway, he came, and there were some young boys running around town, a man by the name of Sam Spencer and another by the name of Alfred Belcher, who had been bragging that they were going to kill him. And that night, on the edge of town, just outside a place called the Boozing Pen, they confronted him on the side of the road, and Spencer, in the argument, pulled a gun and shot him and killed him. And the photograph on the left there is the arrest of Sam Spencer. He served 2 years in Leadville prison for the murder. The Civil War Association, Libby Association, someone, sent investigators here to investigate the murder to make sure that Hamilton got a fair. Spencer wasn't just railroaded in and out and found not guilty. They sent investigators here to make sure that he got a just punishment. On your left here is Thomas Henry Hines. He was working with Hamilton at the time the war started. During the Confederate occupancy of Bowling Green, it began in September of 1861, Hines went to Bowling Green and joined the Confederacy. Initially, he was in the unit called Buckner's Guides. That was made up of about 2 men from each county surrounding Bowling Green. They chose him because of their knowledge of the area. On the right here is Francis Porter. He was the other one chosen from Butler County. Throughout the war, not Francis Porter, John M. Porter. He was a lieutenant under Captain Hines. But they conducted some raids around Bowling Green area in Morgantown in the early part of the war. But they went on and became members of General John Hunt Morgan's brigade. Hines eventually became known as the most dangerous man in the Confederacy. He was a very daring person, but he got that fame basically for on the last of the war when the South thought they were losing the war. They sent a group of men into Canada, down into the U.S., as known as the Northern Conspiracy. Hines was a military commander of that Northern Conspiracy. He operated basically out of Toronto, Canada, but he would come down into Chicago, and their basic plan was to recruit men in the Chicago area from the Copperheads and the Sons of Liberty and organizations of people of the North who really didn't favor being in the war. They wanted the war to be over for various reasons. But anyway, Hines was trying to organize those people, and he got arms shipped in and stashed around Chicago. And they had a day planned that they were going to break the prisoners out of Camp Douglas in Chicago. Camp Douglas was a Union prison in Chicago, was equally as bad as Andersonville prison was in Georgia. But they were going to break the men out of that prison and arm them, and there were about 2,000 Copperheads and Sons of Liberty that was going to join him there. Their ranks were infiltrated somehow, and they sent General Butler into Chicago with a couple thousand troops, and their plan was to come on down to Indianapolis, and the prison camp take Indianapolis and kill the governor and take Indiana over. But during the war, John Hunt Morgan had an unusual habit of picking a few of his best men and send them off into raids. On one particular instance, he picked about 15 men with Thomas Hines and John M. Porter leading. They came into Kentucky here in Warren County and Butler County. They sunk a steamboat that Hetty Gilmore at Clark's Landing, which is on the Barron River, just outside Butler County, about a mile. They burned the grain bins at South Union, and quite a bit of destruction around the area at that time. Morgan was on one of his raids into Kentucky when that happened, and they were to meet up with him at Morgantown here. I pointed out the old Aberdeen Hotel a while ago. Well, Morgan spent the night at that Aberdeen Hotel. It was in October of 1862. And anyway, they were supposed to meet him there, but they had been camping out on the edge of Butler County, out around the Sugar Grove and Little Muddy area, camping along Little Muddy Creek and visiting their families. But anyway, they learned that there was a pretty large Union force in the area out around Little Muddy. So they came, and General Morgan, he was originally going to leave Morgantown and go to Russellville, which would have been in that direction, but he changed his direction and went to Rochester, which is kind of a perpendicular direction from what he originally intended. Instead of going through Russellville back to Tennessee, he went through Hopkinsville. This is Butler County's probably, because there are some institutions of higher learning around Rochester that I'm not sure when they started, but anyway, I believe this was started. I know the property was bought in 1853, but I don't know when the school was actually built. This is Morgantown Seminary. It was originally a three-room school with a bell room and with a cupola and a bell on top. It remained in operation until 1911, which is when this George Dead photograph was taken. This is where George Dead went to school. He says that later it became a four-room because as crowding the school got larger, they used that little bell room as a classroom. But anyway, it was torn down in 1911, and a new brick high school was built on that site. That brick high school was by order of a state mandate that passed in 1908 that mandated that every county build at least one high school within its borders. Theater and oratorical contest, music band, you see the Morgantown band, drum there, but these were other forms of entertainment around the county in the early 1900s. None of these people are known, except this guy right here was Will Kuykendall. I think it's interesting to note that their lighting had live music for the theater. This was the Tilford Theater. It was located right across the street up here where Roy Phelps used car lot was. I think in the latter use of the building was Cliff Day's Shoe Shop, was the Tilford Theater building. This is a Chautauqua program that was operated by the state in the early 1900s. This is around 1920 here. The state sponsored a group of professional theater people to go around to different counties and stay about a week or two in each one. And they would organize local boys and girls into theater productions or whatever they could, theater productions or musicals, or just whatever they had the talent available for. There are a few people in this picture that are identified. That's Joe Forsyth, who ran the county Warren Electric program for years. I think this is Niall Morgan, and I believe that's Martha Spradlin. There are a few more that are known people still living today. This is one of the Rochester churches. It's the Rochester Christian Church. It was built around 1900. And fortunately, it's being restored today. That's a beautiful building. The congregation first started in the 1880s. They purchased a piece of property across the road from this called the Old Meeting House. And the church was organized there. And later on, as they got money and guests and everything, they went across the road to the lot where this church is. And it functioned as a Christian church. I'm not sure into the 1950s, I think. But it remained in good condition up until just the last few years. It was donated in the end to the city of Rochester, and I think for lack of funds it kind of went into disrepair. I think there's some private citizens now that have taken it over and restoring it. This is Green River Bank. It was started in 1898, I think. It was a product or a business establishment, basically of the Hayes brothers. The Hayes brothers were born outside Rochester on the Provo area, and or toward Provo. Their father died when they were young. Their mother married their uncle, and he raised them. They went into the timber business around Rochester during the period when the timber was booming in Butler County. They made a real fortune off the timber business. They would send men into logging camps and stay for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. They accumulated a good deal of wealth, and one of the Hayes brothers, J. Frank Hayes, had married a pretty prominent lady in Rochester, and he promised her that he would build her one of the most beautiful homes in the county. He built this bank, and shortly after built one of the most beautiful homes in Rochester, Hamden County, still standing. Rochester Bank was one of the few businesses in the county that continued in business for over 100 years and just closed down just a few years ago. That's it.
I think we have time for some questions. I find the Palmer House story fascinating. I know many of us have been to conventions in Chicago and stayed in that. I really do admire the spectacular ceilings. So I was struck by your picture in the book about that fabulous hotel. We'll be doing a book signing at the end. We'll be having a reception, compliments of the Daughters of the American Revolution. But it's now time for our door prize. And Peggy, we got the box back. We'll be giving a free copy of the book with us. A little something for our speakers from our museum store.
It's really a lot of fun to learn about our neighbors, and we thought you'd like to have a little memento.
Thank you.
As our gift to the Butler County Library for the generous invitation, do us want to leave a copy of the Centennial History of WKU. And is Kenna here? Is she in the back? Kenna, thank you so much for inviting us. We hope you'll join our speakers at the back and take part in the reception. Again, thank you, DAR. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming out tonight.